And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I will be your host for the next hour here on WFMU, Freeform Station of the Nation, coming at you live from the great state of New Jersey. I'm so happy to be here and happy that you have decided to join me for this next hour as we talk about digital technology and the internet and the World Wide Web, which is, it really is worldwide these days when you think about it. So this hour, what I'm going to do is I'm going to be talking about technology news that I have been waiting for some time to get around to telling you. Let's just say the tech news is overdue. And I do this once in a while. So let's just go ahead and dive in. As it turns out, there was a story from April 1st that I'm going to start with. Actually, before I dive into the today's story, I just wanted to point out that there is an image uploaded to the show's webpage, which you can get to if you go to the WFMU website, which is at www.wfmu.org. If you load that up, after it loads, you'll see that there is a photo there of someone's notebook that says "Cool Places to Go on the Net." And if you know Usenet, you'll see a bunch of Usenet groups that this person, and they're all alt. They're all in the alt dot category. So we have alt.tv.xfiles, alt.fan.letterman. That's one that I like as well. Alt.fan.hellokitty, nothing wrong with that. Alt.cultmovies, and so on and so forth. And there's even alt.cultmovies.rockyhorror, which is, of course, let's do the time warp. Let's do the time warp, which just seems topical as we are finally getting around to this tech news. So you can check that out. There's also listeners who are using a little form on the webpage to type in comments. You type in a comment and then you press the button that says post. And then there's another confirmation step. And then it'll actually post your comment onto the webpage, which is pretty neat. And there are some listeners doing that right now if you want to join in. So let's go to the first tech news story. As I said, this is a story that showed up today, April 1st, and it's from New Jersey. This story is actually from Monmouth County, New Jersey. And the news is that police have arrested one David L. Smith. And if you don't know who David L. Smith is, you may recognize why he's being arrested. The police have arrested him for releasing the email virus that's been going around that's called Melissa. And I don't know if you know about the Melissa email virus, but I can just do a little public service announcement here. If you get an email and it has a subject line that starts "important message from," and then it has someone's name, may have your name, may have someone else's name. So "important message from blank." And but right away, by the way, if you see that, you can be pretty sure you should delete that email. But if you happen to open that, then you can see what the message body is. And if the message body is, "here's that document you asked for, don't show anyone else," with a little smiley emoticon, you want to definitely delete that email because that is carrying the Melissa email virus, which apparently was released. I mean, allegedly, he hasn't been convicted, but allegedly released by New Jersey resident David L. Smith, arrested today, April 1st. And the twist is there's an attachment. There's an email attachment on that message. and it appears to be a Microsoft Word document, which right away, if you want to avoid emails, a good place to start is avoid those emails that have a Microsoft Word document attached to the email. But this one is, in all seriousness, you do not want to open up this Word document attachment, because if you do, it runs a macro, which is a series of steps that have been programmed, I guess, by David Smith, and it takes over your Outlook email program, and it mails the same email to 50 people in your address book. So that's how this email virus spreads, by basically cloning itself and sending it out to 50 people in your address book, several of whom are likely to open it up, click the attachment, and there another 50 people are getting from their address books for each one of them. So if four people out of your 50 open up the attachment, then 200 more of these emails go out and further infect the internet. And so you want to be careful about that. I just want to say that here again we see the shoddy security practices of Microsoft, because this is a Microsoft Word macro that is being spread and, you know, accepted by the email program also made by Microsoft called Outlook. And because of these shoddy security practices, we see slowdowns on the internet and all sorts of infected computer systems. And it's really a bummer to see this sort of thing happen. Of course, it was wrong with what David Smith did, but we can guarantee that if it's David Smith today, it's going to be someone else tomorrow. So really the solution here, more likely to fix the problem, more likely to than arresting the odd hacker here or there, is to go and demand that Microsoft do a better job with its internet technology. But of course, Microsoft doesn't want to do that. They are devoting resources to shore up their monopoly, their Windows monopoly, or if you prefer, the duopoly with Intel. Because Intel, of course, makes the processors that are used in PCs that are running Windows. So it's just irritating to me that here we have an internet with so much promise, and this one giant company, this behemoth out there in Redmond, Washington, people call it the Beast from Redmond, has such poor security protocols that all of us have to pay the price when the stupid Outlook email program delivers this harmful Word document with macros that are designed to slow everything down. So I would say, you know, complain to Microsoft, but who are you going to complain to? I mean, what's the 1-800 number you can call? And what is the email helpline that you could email? And what would they do even if you could deliver a complaint to Microsoft? They would laugh it off. They might even send it up to Bill Gates so that he could have a good laugh about someone asking them to do a better job. They're just sitting there counting their money from the Windows monopoly. That's all they're doing. So anyway, there's your, and if you want to read the article, I told you about the webpage for tonight's show. There is a hyperlink on the page if you scroll down a little bit. And this is an article called Tracking Melissa's Alter Egos. It's written by Luke Ryder in ZDNet. And again, that was today, April 1st. Okay, so we've talked about security a little bit. Let me tell you something about the risks of the internet and the World Wide Web and all of our PCs and other sorts of digital tools as this technology becomes more popular. Here was something that I came across just a few weeks ago in February 18. This was written in USA Today by Elizabeth Wise. I think that's how you say her name. And it's an essay in USA Today, and it's called Slaves to the Machine. Let me just read you some of this. I found this very interesting. In USA Today, Slaves to the Machine says, quote, computers were supposed to liberate us and make life easier, but instead they've enslaved us. too hard to use and prone to inexplicable problems. They're not labor-saving devices. They're a whole new kind of labor unto themselves. Let me just stop there for a second. Have you ever considered that when you're using a PC and maybe you're even using a web browser to go onto the World Wide Web, and there are all these promises swirling around that this is going to save you time. This is going to let you surf to new virtual locations and have new virtual experiences. But did you ever consider that these computers, as the USA Today story says, they're supposed to provide these great opportunities, but they're constantly breaking down, thanks again to Microsoft. And also, it's not just Microsoft, but in large part, but due to the problems I talked about before. And when they break down, when they have glitches, when they have bugs, when they get hacked, that costs time and effort. And so rather than being a labor-saving device, it's really sucking down our labor and time in a way that we did not originally intend. So let me keep reading some of this USA Today story. It continues, PCs provide what psychologists call intermittent reinforcement, says Clifford Nass, a Stanford professor who studies people's relationship to machines. Quote, if your car doesn't turn on, you're stuck. If your toaster oven doesn't toast, it's broken. But computers can half work. You feel like you're making progress, he said. Okay, so here we're seeing that computers are not like cars or toaster ovens, at least in Stanford professor Clifford Nass's words, which I happen to agree with in this case, that a car, when it breaks down, it doesn't move, and it stops. A toaster oven would just stop toasting altogether. You can think of different kitchen appliances that might be on the blink. That just means they're not working at all. But a computer can kind of be broken and kind of work at the same time. It can get slowed down. It can be throwing these weird error messages. It can be asking you to take the computer into the shop to get looked at by some sort of an expert. I mean, if you can find a local repair shop that would do that. And as even as it's giving these errors, it still sort of works. You can still sometimes log into your email. You can still sometimes create a document, hopefully not a Microsoft Word document, but you get my idea. It sort of works and it sort of doesn't. And that's the intermittent reinforcement that Clifford Nass is talking about. You know who else delivers intermittent reinforcement? Have you ever considered it's the behavioral studies of mice that scientists used to do? They used to put a bar in front of a mouse in a little Skinner box, and they found that if the mouse presses the bar and gets a pellet, that doesn't really generate a habit or generate a whole lot of recurring activity on the part of the mouse. What really gets the mouse active is if you only give the pellet once in a while, at random times. That's the intermittent reinforcement. And so if you have a computer that sort of works and sort of doesn't, it works and fits and starts, you're always going back to the computer to see, is it going to work this time? Is it going to work this time? I mean, it's a little bit, if you think about it, it's a little bit like a slot machine you might consider in Las Vegas or Atlantic City or something. Now I don't play slot machines, but people who do, I understand it's exciting to put in the money and see if you're going to win. You never know when you might win big. And so what a strange situation to be in. I think we're still fairly early in the digital revolution, and already we're seeing that our computers are beginning to resemble slot machines a little bit. I mean, that would be something to explore more, I guess, in the future. So the last quote from this USA Today story that I'll read. Quote, conspicuously absent from the ranks of those telling horror stories are Macintosh owners. Not that things don't go wrong with Macs, but because Apple controls both the hardware and the operating system, there's less chance of problems. So here we're seeing the difference between the Macintosh computers that are made by Apple and the Windows PCs that could be made by anybody, IBM, HP, Gateway, Compaq. I mean, there's so many of them that are all running on the Windows Intel duopoly, the shoddy Windows software as the operating system, running on the Intel processor, and they break down all the time. And Apple Macintosh computers don't do that. Now, I know that Macs have been rather unpopular in recent years. I know people have told me, you know, people have told me to my face, Apple is not going to make it, you know, because look at the state the company is in. And it's clear to me that there's new life in this company. You saw that the iMac came out just a few months ago, that bulbous, colorful thing. There could be a very bright future for Apple because it's, as the USA Today story says, it's delivering computers that actually work. And notwithstanding the continuing issues around compatibility, people like computers that work. They like being able to turn the thing on and get something done without it constantly breaking down and having glitches and so on that you get on a Windows PC. All right, so that's the USA Today story with the unusual observation that these computers are delivering intermittent reinforcement as though we are mice in a controlled study or we are gamblers at a casino using a slot machine being somehow experimented on or even manipulated. I don't think that's the explicit aim of Microsoft. I think it's more that despite Microsoft's own mediocre efforts to provide some semblance of a working product, it just is not very good at all. All right, so that is, let's see, that is Slaves to the Machine. Let's move on to this Salon story. This is, again, from a few weeks ago. This is from January. this is by Janelle Brown, who's writing in Salon. And Janelle asks a very important question. Okay, so we've talked about security. We've talked about the reliability of the computers we're using. Now let's talk about some of these new websites that are popping up that are hyping these promises that are going to be hard to deliver. So here's the headline. Are companies like GeoCities truly, quote, building communities? I'm going to read you an excerpt of this story as well, but just think about this. Have you heard these founders of these websites come out? You know, there's so much importance put on what these website founders are saying these days, and they keep going on about community. Oh, we have so many users signed up for our online community. Users have access to this and that feature so that they can build community. I personally get very skeptical when I hear those claims. And so Janelle Brown really digs into this. Here's what Brown writes. GeoCities may call itself the, quote, largest and fastest growing community of personal websites on the internet, unquote. But there's no community to be found in my neighborhood. Quote, community, unquote, is quite possibly the most overused word in the net industry. True community, the ability to connect with people who have similar interests, may well be the key to the digital world, but the term has been diluted and debased to describe even the most tenuous connections, the most minimal interactivity. The presence of a bulletin board with a few posts, or a chat room with some teens swapping age and sex information, or a homepage with an email address does not mean that people are forming anything worthy of the name community. And here's how Janelle Brown finishes up. There's a breakdown between what's being hyped and what's actually happening at these sites. Few of the members actually seem to be communicating with one another. Most people, it seems, just want a place to slap up a picture of their cat. Well, there you have it. These personal websites, these personal web pages on places like GeoCities, they're not for building community. How often do we go and we see it's just pictures of somebody's cat? And some of the cats are cute. Okay, that's fine. You want to put up cat photos. But really, that does not qualify as online community, this concept that we've heard, that we've been promised for so long. It's just not the case. And so, yes, there is a breakdown between what's being hyped and what's actually happening at these sites, which is so often the case. There's more and more money pouring into the net industry, as Janelle Brown puts it, and the hype is all, you know, the sky's the limit, whereas the reality tends to be a glitchy computer, thanks to Microsoft, and these over-designed, slow-loading websites that promise more, much more than they deliver. Okay, so that is GeoCities and the question of building community. Now, we're about to do something a little bit different on the show. I have an interview, actually a couple of brief interviews to play for you. And so while I'm playing that, which I think you're going to really enjoy these interviews, I want to know if you have any questions for me. And I am looking at the comment board on the WFMU website on the webpage that we're using for tonight's show. Again, if you go to www.wfmu.org and then click on, there's a little link on the left side of the page that says playlist and comments, and you can go and you can post a comment. For example, listener Ultra Domino just posted about GeoCities. I always pronounced it to rhyme with atrocities. So maybe we should say it's Geocities. You know, good comment. And maybe from now on, in honor of Ultra there, we should be pronouncing it. When a friend of yours brings up the site, just say, no, it's Geocities. That's the tectonic way. We're going to be renaming or repronouncing some of these sites. Okay, so thank you, Ultra, Geocities. So while you're on the comment board, do you have a question for me? Because, you know, I'm interested in digital technology. I'm interested in the World Wide Web. I've done some reading. I have some experience. If you have a question for me, maybe I will try to answer this on the air. So you can, and look, Will the Sound Guy wants to see if Geocities is still up, and Angel Fire and Tripod. Well, Will, those sites are still up. They're still very much up. I don't know if your pages are up, but yeah, we're gonna see where those sites go. I mean, there is a lot of activity going into online community these days, and sites like Geocities, Angel Fire, and Tripod seem to be in the area of something interesting. I mean, as I said, it's early. It's early in this revolution, but we're going to see where these things take us. So go to www.wfmu.org and click the link that says playlist and comments. It's not underlined, but if you just roll the mouse over on top of it, you'll see it's clickable. You click that, and then you can post a comment or a question for me, and maybe I will field this in the show. But now let me get to our interview. Again, this is just a mini interview with a couple of friends. You may recognize one or both of them. And I want to say, by the way, I want to thank Lily Wen for taking the show last week. Lily Wen guest hosted for me last week, and she interviewed journalist and author Liz Pelly. They were talking about music, and I have to admit it, I didn't totally understand it. It was a little futuristic for me, but it's something like what we're familiar with from the Real Media Player, the Real Audio Player. From Real Networks. You know, Real Audio, you can set up a stream and you can stream music or whatever. So if you want to hear that alternative to Real Audio, you can go back on the WFMU website, find the archives on the website, and you can click in and listen to Lily Wen's interview last week of Liz Pelly. And the reason I'm bringing this up, not just to say thanks to Lily, she did a great job, and Liz as well. But to say that this interview, I wanted to talk to some friends about music. And so you're going to hear what they have to say about their experience with music and the internet in general. And let me see if I can bring this up. And here it is. It's just a few minutes long, but I'm interested to know what you think of this. All right, I'm sitting here with DJ Stashu. Stashu, what do you think about internet technology these days?
Well, I'm using Napster right now to download a lot of Susie and the Banshees because I think finding the records is just like harder. Although I got really frustrated because I had to start using LimeWire because Napster is like the bit rates are so slow and it takes forever. I mean, I keep my computer up the whole time and I watch the progress, but it's like a whole day. And by the end of the day, you know, there I am with all this bounty and Kraftwerk, you name it. I have everything just digitally. I don't have to put it on a shelf.
Okay, now if listeners haven't tried these out, Napster and LimeWire are these music sharing services. I guess they could be used for any kind of file sharing, but most people use them to share these music files. And they're totally free somehow, right?
Yeah, it's totally free. I do get worried sometimes, though, that, you know, they've caught people for downloading things for free, and I don't want to be one of those people. Right now, it's just kind of the Wild West, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
Do you think you're ever going to find the time to listen to all that music that you're getting?
Oh, yeah, it's so exciting because it leads me to find other things. If I put in keywords, then I find songs that I didn't even know that I liked by other bands that I'm just exploring.
Susie and the Banshees, is that the Kiss Them For Me song?
Yeah, but I've gone way further into the catalog, and I found that she has covered Helter Skelter, and she's covered Passenger by Iggy Pop. And this is everything that I've learned by just searching keywords and things that I hope that there are songs about.
What do you think the future is for Napster and LimeWire? I mean, it seems like the record companies are starting to take a little bit of notice of this.
They haven't noticed quite yet, and that's I'm taking advantage while I can, and I'm just going to have them here. Hopefully I don't get in trouble. It does seem a little too good to be true.
All right. Thank you, DJ Stashu.
Yeah, you're welcome, Mark.
Okay, now we have Chuckamuck here. Chuckamuck, what do you think about the internet today?
I think it's a great tool for correspondence and meeting new people. I've used it a lot to take part in bulletin board services that are on the internet and meeting people that way and exchanging mostly music, and that will eventually turn into physical correspondence when we send each other music and mixtapes and things. And then even with some of these people that I've corresponded with as pen pals, you know, we have met in real life and they've become good friends.
Now, if you say bulletin boards, most people these days think about America Online and with those discs that get mailed out to everybody. Are you using AOL or are you on that more academic side of the internet that has the Usenet forums or somewhere else?
I would describe it as a more academic end of the internet. I haven't used America Online in a number of years. It was prohibitively expensive, and I can't afford to pay the phone bills at home for a modem, so I use it at school.
And do you have your own email address as well?
I do.
What do you think about email? I mean, I imagine you've only had email for a few years. Most people, if they have email at all, have gotten it recently. Are you using that as well? You mentioned pen pals. Is that what you use for your pen pal letters?
Yes, exactly. But I mean, again, like I said, it becomes a physical medium when you transcend that and you're exchanging physical addresses in order to send cassettes or CDs to these people that you meet. I mean, I've been using email since 1994 when I was on America Online at the time, but now I have a university address and an internship address, so I use both of those.
The internship employer, they don't mind you using their system to post on bulletin boards and share files and so on?
I interned for a small record label in Brooklyn, so no, they do not.
That's pretty cool. What's the name of it?
Shelf Life.
All right, everybody, check out Shelf Life and check them out. Thanks for talking to me.
Thank you, Mark.
Okay, so again, that was my brief interview with DJ Stashu and Chuckamuck, two friends of mine who I happened to see at the station recently, and we talked about the state of the internet. And you heard that Stashu is using Napster to download a lot of music. I still have that question. I mean, someone downloads hours and hours of these songs, whether it's Susie and the Banshees or whatever is your band that you're going deep on. And when are people going to find time to listen to all that? And how are they going to find the memory, the hardware that is, to have enough memory to store all of that? Where would they store it? Do they have a garage where they're going to put all of the zip drives and so on? I mean, it just seems like we're entering into a new era where the amount of information that we have access to far, far outstrips our ability to actually experience it. Certainly, we've seen this for the last couple of years with worldwide websites. You don't have nearly enough time to read everything you might want to, people's homepages and so on. But when it comes to music, I mean, that's a deep ocean out there, and Napster seems to have everything, at least for now. As Stashu said, the music industry is starting to go after people pretty aggressively. So we'll see. I'm going to keep an eye on it, and I will continue to cover this here on Tectonic. I think the idea of music online is a really interesting one. But I mentioned that people can post comments and questions on the comment board at WFMU.org. And here's one from listener Joe R., who says, "Hey, Mark, sounds like you like Macs. That's okay. Macs are pretty good. Like you said, they work. But do you know there's another choice, Linux?" And Joe says he's a proud Linux user. Yes, I am familiar with Linux. In college a few years ago, I got pretty proficient with Unix. The system at my college was all Unix run, and so I got very good at the command line interface, the various, I think it was TC shell that I used. I'm an Emacs user, not VI, definitely not VI. And Linux is a, for those of you who don't know, it's that giant hulking Unix operating system that's really meant for academic and government computer networks. And it's this guy named Linus compressed it down to be the size that you could run it on a single PC. And so what a glorious moment it is to wipe a PC of Microsoft Windows, to get that buggy virusware right off of the hardware, and to put Linux on instead. And it's The code is all publicly available, and so you can inspect the code yourself. And there's a team of volunteers out there who are using the internet to communicate about the fixes that they're making to where there happens to be a glitch or a bug, or better yet, when they want to make an improvement, they can communicate with each other. So it's not behind corporate firewalls like they are in Redmond. Okay, so thank you, Joe, for that mention of Linux. Let's see. Salt Install says there's a new website called Friendster.com. I have not heard of that, Friendster. I'm going to have to check that out, but I don't think that exists. I am pretty well up on friend style websites, and I have never heard of something called Friendster. However, I do know of one called 6degrees. If you've never tried this, the website called 6degrees, you can look it up on Yahoo or AltaVista. It is a site where it's kind of like you have your own homepage, but you don't have to learn HTML. This site will host your own homepage, and then somehow you have a connection to a friend's homepage. And the idea is everyone, you've heard about 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, this urban legend that everyone is connected to everyone else, to Kevin Bacon within 6 degrees. I know this person who knows this person who knows this person, and six degrees away is Kevin Bacon. So this website, which is, I think this is doing the same thing that Geocities claims to be doing, which is trying to build community by getting people to connect with one another, connect their homepages together, which I think is, you know, I think it's an interesting idea. I also think it's nice to connect with people in person. But if you have to use a computer, you could check out that site, 6 degrees. By the way, I mentioned Yahoo and AltaVista. You could list off all of the search engines we know, InfoSeek and Lycos and the rest. But there is one that you may not have heard of that just launched a few months ago. It's this thing, these two, they were grad students at Stanford, and they've launched this new search engine, which is similar but also different from Yahoo. It's called Google, but it's not the number. I know if you know numbers, you're thinking Google, that's G-O-O-G-O-L. That's a one with 100 zeros after it. That's not what it is. They spell it G-O-O-G-L-E. And I was using it for a while. It was on the Stanford's. It was stanford.edu/, I can't remember. It was like tilde Google, I think. But anyway, they've gotten their own domain name. So now you can go to www.google.com and you can try this out. And that's where you can look up stuff like that 6 degrees site I just talked about. The nice thing about this Google search engine is that it's not trying to be a portal. You know how Yahoo and AltaVista are building all of this, again, all this hype. They're putting all of this material on their websites and saying, it's a portal, you never have to leave. Like, they want you to only look at their material. Well, Google is doing something completely different. They actually are trying to help you by giving you the hyperlink that you want so that you will leave. And I'm telling you, I think that's a really interesting approach when you have most of the companies relying on hype and just trying to make money. And here is Google, which actually is trying to do something good by getting you off of their site and on towards the website that you wanted to find in the first place. So if you haven't tried it, just go, and it's a very simple interface. All it is the Google logo, and there's a little text form for you to type in what you want to search for, and then the button to search for it. And that's about it on the homepage of the Google.com website. So you can try it out. Anyway, just a little tip. I'm going to continue to keep on the lookout of some of these new tools that could be, you know, could be interesting developments in those in the future. Okay, let's see. Not a Real Doctor in Norfolk, Virginia says, you know, I think the internet is a great place for sharing game genie codes for my Nintendo. It's so frustrating that you have to start over from the beginning every time you load up Super Mario Brothers. Yeah, the codes, the game code, the genie codes, the cheat codes, the internet is going to be, in fact, Usenet is going to have a lot of those if you want to find those. And I like the mention of Nintendo because, of course, our theme song this evening is from Mario Kart on the N64. It's Koopa Troopa Beach, which just came out last year. Great game. Great soundtrack. I mean, of course, the N64 is one of the leading consoles right now. But, I mean, just the amount of music and graphics and level design they were able to put into Mario Kart 64, really, really good. Let's see. What are the others? Dan F.A. is asking, is Napster still around? Good one, Dan. Is Napster still around? Any other questions? Yeah, I think, here's Dan F.A. again. Mark, do you do any shopping online? If so, what do you use to buy household appliances? Well, Dan, I don't know any place where you can buy household appliances online. I have done a little bit of online shopping. I know people are very curious about this and also cautious because you're actually typing your credit card number into a computer and who knows who sees it on the other end. But I mean, I figure if something goes wrong, I can call a credit card company. And anyway, all I'm doing is buying books. And so if you haven't gone to the site, you should at least take a look. It's called Amazon.com. And you, again, it's www.amazon.com. And they mostly sell books. And it's a really good selection. So rather than driving to a Borders or any of the various Barnes and Noble stores in the New York area, or driving or taking the subway or whatever, you can just use your computer and you can look up a book, and it's kind of interesting to see their selection. There's no browsing, of course. It is still more fun to go to a bookstore and browse around, but if you know the book you want, you can at least give it a shot. But as for household appliances, I don't know if that's ever going to happen, Dan. That would be a lot of money on a credit card to put into a worldwide website. And if there is anything else, Station Manager Ken Friedman has a comment. Thanks, Ken, for writing in. Real Player is the best, Ken says. I agree, Ken. It's a solid piece of software, and the audio quality is surprisingly good. You know, if you find something you want to stream. AudioNet just started recording 7-second delay every week and makes the files available as RAM files. That's .RAM. That's a real audio media file, if you don't know. RAM files, and it's a little tinny, but hey. So everyone should go check that out. 7-second delay is Station Manager Ken Freeman's show with Andy Breckman. It's a weekly show here on WFMU, and they're using Real Player, which is, as I was just saying before, you know, this idea of streaming some audio, it's really interesting. It is a little tinny, I will admit. The fidelity of the audio is a little bit tinny. It's not like listening on how you usually listen to WFMU, which is the FM radio, of course. But it's worth checking out because, you know, if you happen to be outside the reception of the signal of our FM antenna, what are you going to do? And maybe the internet could give some people outside of New York, New Jersey, a way to listen live or close to it, or even to the archives, to shows like 7-second delay. So thank you, Ken, for bringing that up. Let's see. Listener Robert says, I'm dialing into a BBS that makes UUCP connection to the nets twice a day. I guess everyone by now knows what a BBS is, a bulletin board system. And a UUCP connection is, that it gets into the weeds a little bit, but it's a kind of protocol. If you've heard of TCP/IP, which is the protocol that websites use, UUCP is a different kind of protocol just like that. But it looks like TCP/IP is going to become more important. It's certainly getting very, very popular these days. And let's see, Acid Cash says, I use Linux for my web server. That's great. Oh, Joe Mulligan, don't forget Ask Jeeves. Of course. Ask Jeeves is another search engine. You get to You can type in questions and just regular English questions, and they have a logo of this butler who is Jeeves, who says it's like he's saying, "Oh, let me procure that answer for you, sir." So it's kind of an interesting concept. The quality of the search results is not quite as good as you might hope from a nice cartoon butler, but it's worth taking a look at. So thank you to Joe. Dean says, I interviewed Kevin Bacon's personal assistant. So look, Dean is at 2 degrees from Kevin Bacon. That's pretty cool. And I don't know what else to say. Oh, we have a few more. Salt and Stahl says dogpile.com. Yes, that's another search engine. That one is pretty good, actually, if you haven't tried dogpile.com, because it's a meta search engine. As Salt and Stahl says, Dogpile takes Yahoo, Netscape, AltaVista, Ask Jeeves, another search engine. Well, Netscape is not a search engine, but Yahoo, AltaVista, Ask Jeeves, I would guess it takes InfoSeek as well, and Lycos, and other search engines, and puts them all together for a super search, which I find very interesting. Let's see if there's anything else to say. Thank you for all these great comments, by the way. I can't read all of them so easily when I'm going through. But let me just say two other things. Actually, I have two other comments, and then I want to make way for Dave Mantle. By the way, if you're just tuning in, you know what show this is. This is Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. It's a Monday evening. We're talking about digital technology and the internet and the World Wide Web, like I like to talk about. And so we've talked about a new search engine called Google.com, which has a different approach from Yahoo and AltaVista. We've talked about a new online shopping site for books called Amazon.com. We've talked about Apple Macintosh computers that seem to be working better than the eternally disappointing Microsoft Windows PCs. And even though people don't seem to use Apple Macintoshes, I keep using them. Although Linux is another good option if you have a PC. So we've talked about these online community websites like 6degrees and Geocities and AngelFire. So there's a lot of really interesting activity going on the World Wide Web. I just wanted to read this thing from last December. This is by J.D. Beiersdorfer in the New York Times. The headline is, "Click here for less confusion." Web designers today, Beiersdorfer writes, web designers today are trying to pare down their pages, creating sites that are logical as well as luscious. Quote, "Web surfers have a very short attention span, and considering how slow modems are today, it's a challenge to attract someone quickly," says Jeffrey Veen, who's a web designer. "We try to grab someone's attention in less than 10 seconds. That means using almost no complex images, just text and simple colors for visual cues." Jeffrey Veen is working on the Wired website, and I think he's really right. I mean, you have 10 seconds at most. And think about this. When someone's on a 288 modem, I mean, most people don't have access to ISDN, okay? So you have to be, if you're building a web page, you have to consider someone could be on a 288 modem, and listen to what Chuckamuck said earlier. They might have to be logging in to your website from their school or their job, like at the record label, because they can't afford to have another phone line at home for their modem. So I don't know, this is my suggestion. And I think WFMU does a really good job on the www.wfmu.org website. It's very simple, it's very attractive, and gives a lot of interesting information. Other people who are building websites out there should keep it in mind. Just go easy on those complex images, because people don't have very much time. Listen, there's one other thing that I wanted to bring up, and that is, that there's something coming later this year that is everyone's a little bit anxious about right now. And it's a big event, You know, it's going to be, it's already in the news as people are preparing for it. Late in the year, in the fall, I guess we could say, we're going to have to face this major, it's a possible transition. And people are worried about, well, you know what I'm talking about. They're worried about the outcome. They're worried about the result. And a lot of people are talking right now about how the internet plays into this and how it might affect the outcome. And what are we going to do if this major national event that we're all thinking of goes in a way that we don't like? And you already know what I'm talking about. And I thought I could get through a show without saying the name, but I'm just going to say it. It's Y2K. Yep, there I said it. Okay, I said it. It's Y2K. Everybody is freaking out. What's going to happen when the computers flip over from 1999 to 2000? Because the digits were never, there were only two digits for the year. And so everything, all the computers are going to think it's 1900. And we have, this is, if you think about it, it's interesting because we are exactly 9 months away. Today, April 1st, 1999, we are exactly 9 months from finding out what the result of this potential national trauma is going to be. And all I can say is stick close to your community. And for me, in large part, that's going to be WFMU. And so I want to thank you for being a part of this community and being with me. I hope you've enjoyed this edition of Tectonic. I hope you have learned some things. And I will be back next week with more information and comment about the World Wide Web. And I have some homework for you, friends. Until next time, you know exactly what to do. Avoid AOL. Isolate IBM. Put Intel outside. And whatever you do, friends, move off Microsoft. You're listening to the greatest radio station in the world, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County, and 91.9 FM and online at http://www.wfmu.org. And just keep in mind, those are slashes. They are not backslashes. Could people stop saying backslash, backslash? They are not backslashes. That's another one. We can thank Bill Gates for the backslash that he put into MS-DOS when it was a slash all the time in World Wide Web URLs. Anyway, there's my rant. I want to play a theme from one of my favorite movies that I saw last year, which is Lola Rent, or Run Lola Run. And I want you to stay tuned for my friend Dave Mandel, to whom no one holds a candle, with his show It's Complicated. Have a great week, everybody.
Hello, welcome to another exciting installment of It's Complicated. I'm Dave Mandel. I'm your host, the host of this show. I'm here every Monday between the hours of 7 and 8, and there's not a thing you can do about it. Much more exciting music for you tonight, and we're going to start off with a track from a group called Needlepoint. This is a relatively recent. Oh, that sounds much better. Thank you. This is a relatively recent record released, I think, in 2021. Needlepoint is a Norwegian band. I forgot my Scandinavian countries there for a second. Needlepoint is from Norway. And we're going to hear a track from an album called Walking Up That Valley. And it's a kind of jazzy, a little bit of Soft Machine, maybe, a little bit of a Soft Machine influence. But here we go. This is going to be a track called I Offered You the Moon from the group Needlepoint.
I watch your face on the pillow, it's freed from ovaries. Your breath so quiet and so calm, gone are your sorrows and your feet. Your hair is like trails for your thoughts, but your thoughts are not walking, I'm watching you, my dear. An ocean's lust just because you couldn't cry. A sky was lost since you never opened up your eyes. The whole world was put on hold, cause your mind wouldn't let your inner thoughts fly. I offered you the moon, said do what you want with it. I told you it's yours for a night, make the dark side of the front, turn on the light. I told you to go for a walk, find a place to sit and watch the wondrous sight.
Jupiter shines among the stars while she spins the veil around her head, and far away you can see the earth hanging by a thread, just like a ship that's caught in a gale, waiting for the rescue on the open sea. But if you turn around, you will see the dawn filling all the holes on the moon, and you can swim in the craters all around. Lay down and let the sun wipe away the droplets from your skin, leaves you warm and dry.
Your smile was so bright that I almost had to hide.